to work. So yesterday we were talking about rational points and then mostly small Picard number of K3s. Today I would like to look at the other extreme, big Picard number, but first as a little addendum, which was maybe implicit in the talk yesterday, you should think of the Picard number as something that's generally hard to compute or maybe even impossible to compute. So there are no general known methods given a surface how to compute the Picard number. Unless you're lucky, you have some extra structure. You've seen in Chuck's talk this morning there was a K3 with a big group of automorphisms, and this enabled you to kind of compute the Picard number abstractly. Also with K3s there's an advantage that I wanted to mention once, since also Noriko asked this question this morning, like there was the K3, there was the quotient, what's the Picard number of the quotient? And generally, if you have two K3 surfaces, so Picard number hard to compute. And now the advantage on the K3 side is that sometimes you can switch to a related K3 surface. And by that, I mean if you have two K3s, I should stick to my S's from yesterday, SS prime with a rational dominant map, both K3, then the Picard numbers are the same. And this is essentially because they have the same Hodge structure, which you can blow up the locus of indeterminacy, but the Hodge structure stays the same, and it also survives the morphism then. And this is an argument that goes back to Inose, whose name appeared in Chuck's lecture already this morning. I think he called it the notion of isogeny, although there's no map in the other direction. And this is something that proves extremely useful in the K3 world. So sometimes you have a K3, and then you can mod out by some group, and what you get has singularities, and then you can maybe get a hand on the Picard number more easily, and you just deduce that the original surface had the same Picard number. Okay, and this will also appear later on when we talk about Mod of A-rings. So today, big Picard number, a little detour to Mod of A-rings, maybe some words about modularity. There will be somewhat of an overlap with Chuck's lecture, with maybe some letters exchanged, as you'll see in a minute. So now, K3s with big Picard number and let's start at the very extreme with the maximum. And I think this was pointed out by Noriko yesterday. I already had it on the board. It's given by H11, at least if we work over the complex numbers. And on the K3 case, this is 20. And these are called singular K3s. And singular meaning exceptional, so there are no singularities involved, or if, then we consider the resolution. And we had an example yesterday too. Let me put it over here. This was the Fermat. Quartic. In P3. And what was the idea? Well, just take the easiest curves you can think of, take the 48 lines where you just kind of split up the equation into two, factor each of them, and there are three ways to do this. Each gives you 16 lines, and then you write down this huge Grum matrix with the intersection numbers, and it turns out to have rank 20, and there you are. Because there this is 20 is the upper bound, you reach the upper bound. So the Picard number is 20. So this is the first example. What's nice, or one of the nice things about singular K3 surfaces, is that you can give a very explicit statement of the Torelli theorem. And for that, we just need the transcendental lattice. It's also been on the board in Noriko's lecture yesterday. So you just take Neon Zaveri inside H2. This is a lattice of rank 22, unimodular. This is rank 20. Take the orthogonal complement. This gives you something of rank 2. In the case of singular K3 surfaces, positive definite, even. And now the Torelli theorem says, or two singular K3s are isomorphic if and only if the transcendental lattices are isometric. And if you prefer to think of quadratic forms, just think here, write it out as 2a, b, b, 2c for some positive definite quadratic form. So this is really very explicit. You can ask, how about the Fermat? What's this quadratic form? And that turns out to be not so trivial, because you have these lines, so 48 lines, Gram matrix of rank 20, and then you find a basis of the lines, or of their span, and you find that they have a discriminant of minus 64. But then you still have to wonder whether this is all of Neon Zaveri, or whether there is some linear combination of the lines that's two divisible. And I think this was the state of the art, well, at least in the early 70s, so this was known to Piatecki, Shapiro, and Shafarevich, and they even proved it's minus 64 or minus 16, so there were only two possibilities left. But then, I think they didn't get any further, and there was a paper by Demjanenko, which seemed to imply minus 64, but Kessels later on spotted an error in there. In the meantime, a student of Shioda, Mitsukami, proved that it should really be minus 64. But this really needs some extra work, this tiny little question. So this is the discriminant of what's spanned by the lines, and this turns out to be generate Neon Zaveri really over the integers. And once you have that, you can compute the transcendental lattice, and this is essentially using the techniques introduced by Nikulin that Shigeyuki sketched this morning. You just work with discriminant forms and figure out that the transcendental lattice is 8008. Okay, and we already see that somehow also the automorphism of order 4 is visible here, because the quadratic form has some extra symmetry, so it seems to be all consistent. Now I'm saying Torelli, of course there's also the surjectivity of the period map. In order to see that, we can do something very explicit. So far, also yesterday, we had some generic things about K3 surfaces, but doing explicit things was sometimes not so easy. And here we can be completely explicit about these singular K3 surfaces. And this is some construction that goes back to Shioda and Inose from the mid-70s. And let me tell you a bit about this construction, because we can also practice elliptic vibrations on the way and re-encounter the formulas by Chuck, or at least the examples, even if I don't write out the formulas completely. So the surjectivity of the period map, meaning every possible form occurs as the transcendental lattice of a singular K3. Yes. That the Fermat is the Kummer. So Igor was pointing out that the Fermat quartic is a Kummer surface of two elliptic curves. And in fact, we'll see soon that every singular K3 is maybe not Kummer, but close enough to it to work them out. And I'm not sure who proved it for the Fermat. So Piatecki, Shapiro, and Shafarevich proved that it's Kummer, but they didn't work out the elliptic curves. And I think Swinnerton Dyer recently did something where he works out an explicit... does he do it explicitly? I mean, he has some family of K3s which specializes to this one. So it's an Inose's paper, which is not even in Japanese, or is it? But this is not the notion of isogeny, but another one, right? Well, it's in the 70s. So every two-form quadratic form occurs, and the first step to do it is to do it for abelian surfaces. This was done by Shioda and Mitani. Also singular abelian surfaces. So here, singular refers to maximal Picard number again, which is 4. And then, just remember the elliptic curves from Chuck's lecture yesterday, which you just gave in terms of some parameter in the upper half plane. And we'll just choose a product of elliptic curves, E and E prime, each given by some parameter in the upper half plane. E corresponds to the parameter, now what is it? Minus B plus B by 2A, and E prime corresponds to B plus square root D by 2. D here is B squared minus 4AC, which is exactly the discriminant. And here, just think of the torus, which is kind of induced by the lattice, which is spanned by 1 and this point in the upper half plane. And then Shioda and Mitani proved that if you take this abelian surface, first of all, it's singular, and secondly, it has exactly the right transcendental lattice. And why it's singular? This is something that you might see right away, because you can see from the points that you picked, because these are quadratic imaginary, that the curve admits x prime endomorphisms. That means it has complex multiplication on these two curves at the same time isogenous. The graph of the isogeny gives you an additional divisor in the product, and then you can compose the isogeny with the endomorphism to get yet something else, and this gives you the Picard number 4 together with the two factors here. Okay. So this is basically Torelli and surjectivity of the period map for abelian surfaces, as for singular abelian surfaces. Now the question is, how do you proceed to the K3 world? And the initial hope was you could just do with Hummer surfaces, but that, fortunately or unfortunately, does not work out. Well, C is hidden in the D. The D here has the C in it. It's B squared minus 4AC. So let's try the Kummer. Of A, so just as a reminder, we have our abelian surface. On this we have minus 1, the involution with respect to the group structure. So we can consider the quotient by this. This does not kill the 2 form, but introduces 16 A1 singularities exactly at the 2 torsion points, and we can resolve them to get a K3 surface, which is called the Kummer surface of A. And now, in the singular K3 case, what happens to the transcendental lattice is it's multiplied by 2. I don't remember, did you use round brackets? Do you want to use edgy or round? Well, this is intersection form multiplied by 2. In front, then the intersection form is multiplied by 4. Round? Okay, let's do round then. Okay, democracy wins. So, looking at the Fermat again, you can divide coefficients all by 2 while preserving the property that it's an even quadratic form. So this tells us abstractly that that will be a Kummer surface. And in fact, we can work out the elliptic curves. So here, maybe this was not so smart the way I set it up. Okay, so this is the Kummer of an abelian surface. A has transcendental lattice 4004, and if we plug this there in there, then we find E. B is 0. D here is minus 16, so probably this should be corresponding to square root minus 1, and E prime correspond to twice square root minus 1. So this is the elliptic curve you all know with an automorphism of order 4. The J invariant is 12 cubed. And this is another elliptic curve defined over Q, which gives you another interpretation of the Fermat quartet having a model of a Q coming from the elliptic curves. Okay. So, but if you now pick a quadratic form that's not too divisible as an even form, then we also see the surface, or the K3 surface, the singular K3 corresponding to it cannot be Kummer, so you have to come up with a new idea. And this is really where Shioda and Enosis construction starts. So Shioda Enosis construction. And namely, they work with elliptic vibrations on the Kummer surface. And this is one of the things that I maybe should have mentioned yesterday when talking about elliptic vibrations. If you just take an elliptic surface, usually this will only have one elliptic vibration. K3 surfaces have the property that they can have many. And this is something that allows you to really play around with them. Sometimes you have some vibration at hand, and then you are able to get to the other vibrations and, for instance, can deduce that they have a big mod of A rank. So this can be extremely useful. And I guess in Abhinav's talk, there will be applications of this also in Marie-Jose Bertin's talk. She will look at elliptic vibrations on K3 surfaces, on some specific one. So this is really something very useful. So let's see what kind of elliptic vibration comes for free on the Kummer surface. Now, not of an arbitrary abelian surface, but of a product. So on Kummer of E times E prime. Well, maybe let me draw a picture. So this is the 16 to become singularities on the quotient. These are the 16 two torsion points of the product, and basically through each of them there are two elliptic curves, the fibers of the natural projections. So here we have the projection onto E prime, let's say, and here onto E. And now what happens in the quotient? In the quotient, all these elliptic curves become rational, and we get singularities in the 16A1, in the 16 two torsion points. And then the resolution resolves all the singularities. So this is the product, and on the Kummer, I have to be a bit more careful. I still have four rational curves. And four in the other day. The other, well, four horizontally. But they do not intersect anymore because they've been separated by the exceptional curves. So this is the famous double Kummer pencil. And now we directly see two elliptic vibrations, because we still have basically maps onto P1 going sideways and down, just induced by the projections onto E and E prime, and you directly see the singular fibers, which are always kind of the what's left of the elliptic curve and the four exceptional divisors. And this is exactly curve of type 10* in Kodairos notation, or Dynkin diagram D4 twiddle, so the extended thing. And then how to find other vibrations? which is the main step in order to get to the subjectivity, after all, it turns out. And what one nowadays, maybe several of us, do quite often in their spare time or not, is find another elliptic vibration by just looking at finding a suitable divisor in the Neron-Severi group. And well, this result goes also back to Piatecki, Shapiro, and Shafarevich, that just given a divisor that has the type of a singular fiber, the linear system will induce an elliptic vibration exactly with this thing as a singular fiber. So for instance, what we can spot easily is just going once around this square. This is a cycle of n rational curves. So this would be a curve, a singular fiber of type I8. And this would induce you an elliptic vibration with this singular fiber. And then all the other curves meeting this divisor in just one point will give you sections. And you can probably spot in this corner here another 1-8 fiber. So this would be already 2. This is maybe the most obvious thing next to this. If you just look at this drawing. And in fact, Keiichi Ogiso classified in the late 80s all the elliptic vibrations on the Kummer. And the one that I'm going to trying to find now is, I think, the only one that Shioda and Inose really cared about. And we'll try to look for a divisor of type 2 star. So this is E8 Twiddle in Kodaira's notation. So maybe I should write the blinking diagram in this little corner here. So we have a long chain of roots, 8 of them. Let's just put here another one, and that's E8 Twiddle. Omit the final root, then this is E8 negative definite according to our normalization unimodular lattice. And now let's find this here in terms of our rational curves. Oh, start up here with this curve. This is number 1, number 2, 3, 4, 5. And we can go down here, 6, 7, 8. No self-intersections. And then we'll just add one more thing here. This is the 9th root sitting on top of here. So this induces an elliptic vibration. And in fact, it comes with a section because this curve here only meets the simple component at the very end of the fiber. So this will be a section. And then one finds that there are still some curves that do not meet this fiber of type 2 star. Maybe I can draw them with twiddles. So these three curves, and likewise here, these three curves are orthogonal to our singular fiber, which means they have to sit in some other fiber. So what we have found is a 2-star fiber, a section, and then 2 times 3 further fiber components. And then what Shioda and Inose worked out is that we have a 2-star, and then the others can only be 1-0-star, 1-1-star, or 4-star. And don't worry about these two, because this is the generic case. So 2 times 0 star, and generic means for E not isogenous to E prime. And, well, I zero star or 1 0 star, we've seen it over there on the other board. Now, I promised you we want to get back to the original quadratic form, and somehow, so far I've only been playing around with elliptic vibrations, but the main thing now is that we can apply base change to this elliptic vibration that we have. What is this here? So now, for the original 2ABB2C quadratic form, we perform a base change. So a quadratic map from P1 to P1 that exactly ramifies at the 2 fibers of 1 0 star. This induces, we have here the Kummer, and we get a rational dominant map from another K3S with an elliptic vibration. Here we had 2 star and 2 1 0 stars, and here we just get 2 2 stars. And this is something that I will spare you the details about the effect of these base changes. Maybe we can see it in a second in the other direction, why these 1 0 stars are really disappearing when base changing. So the claim really is that this space changed K3 surface has the transcendental lattice that we are looking for. If we start with the proper abelian surface, and how does this come about? Well, the space change gives you an involution on the K3 upstairs, which is just interchanging fibers, and you also have the minus 1 on the singular fibers. And if you just compose the involution on the base with the minus 1, this gives you a Nicolin involution, as we would nowadays say. So a Nicolin involution means 8 isolated fixed points. And you see them immediately because the transformation, the involution on the base exchanges fibers except for 2 fixed fibers. And the fixed fibers, you have minus 1 acting, so just the 2 torsion points are fixed. And in the quotient, you just get a rational curve with 4 singularities. Resolving them gives you exactly the fiber of type 1 0 star. And then in the mid-70s, Fiore and Nose did some explicit computation to compute that the transcendental lattice of S is just transcendental lattice of the Kummer. Scaled by 1/2. Nowadays, one would probably appeal to Morrison, who tells you this always holds if two E8s are exchanged in there in Severi. And this is exactly what's happening here. The two star fibers are exchanged by the involution on the base. Okay, so we started with an abelian surface of the right form, went through some auxiliary Kummer, which had twice the form. Now we divide by two again, which means we end up with a K3 with the right quadratic form. And this is exactly how this surjectivity is proven. Okay, so this is all stuff done in the 70s. Now let's take a little detour, because people back then, first of all, one should maybe point out, elliptic vibrations were not so commonly used back then. So these kind of manipulations that nowadays are somewhat standard, then they were maybe at least not so common. Well, Igor says they were, but... yeah. Okay, it was all there. But maybe people didn't care so much about Moller-Weyl rings yet. Did they? Then why did it take another 20 years or more until people worked out explicit K3 surfaces with any given Moller-Weyl ring? Well, because maybe people were satisfied if they knew the generic answer. Well, the fun thing is that this construction allows you to realize almost every Moller-Weyl rank on a K3 surface. So, let's take this as a little detour, because this is one of the key points that Noam Elkies will also talk about in his talk. Detour. And now if you remember the Picard numbers at most 20, we know there's a contribution of the section. If we have a section of this generic fiber, that gives 2, so the Moller-Weyl rank can be anything between 0 and 18. And abstractly, you can answer this completely in terms of lattice polarizations by just writing out suitable lattices. But then the question remains explicit K3 surfaces with given Moller-Weyl rank. And here, we can just start from the same construction, taking arbitrary elliptic curves. So S and then the Moller-Weyl rank is 0 if the curves are not isogenous. I guess I should correct something here. Where did I write not isogenous? Here. What I meant is not isomorphic. If they are isomorphic, then there is some extra component in the singular fibers. Isogenous is allowed here. So the rank is 0 if they are not isogenous, 1 if they are isogenous but not CM on the primes, and 2 if they are isogenous and they have CM. So the Fermat that I just erased, we had 2 elliptic curves, both had CM by an order in the Gaussian integers. So this gave us Moller-Weyl rank 2 for this particular elliptic vibration. And by the way, this is exactly the vibration that Chuck had on his board this morning with h and 2 e8. And now what you're going to do is play the same game with base change ramified at these two fibers. We first got rid of those. Now you apply cyclic base change that ramifies only at these two fibers. The degree is at most 6, this still gives you a K3. The Picard number has to be the same according to what I told you at the very beginning, but the contribution from the singular fibers becomes less and less because these kind of loose components on the way of the base change, which means the mod FA rank goes up. So and it turns out this is something Masato Kuwata, who at some point should also be here, worked out in the 90s, that all mod FA ranks up to 15 are realized in this way, or can be realized in this way. And you should know this is completely explicit because, well, either you take non-isogenous curves, isogenous non-CM, CM curves, so you can really write down equations and as many as you want, basically. And then this final thing was done by Remke Klostermann. That's with similar techniques that I sketched yesterday. The Ronald von Lauck thing for Picard number 1. You can also apply this for higher Picard number. So this is how he, well, after finding a family that generically has has mod FA rank 15, worked out some explicit members where this really holds. So this is the detour for mod FA ranks. This is, of course, over C. And then where Noam Elkies will take over is asking the same question over Q. And this turns out to be completely different, and using some number theory that basically comes from the quadratic forms, you can show that rank 18 cannot be attained over Q. And then using some constructions also related to Shimura curves, so these of course moduli of K3 surfaces with Picard number at least 19, and Chuck has already alluded to these occurrences, Noam found rank 17 over Q. So mod FA over Q, see one of Noam Elkies' two talks on Friday and Saturday. Okay, now I am already over Q. Let's talk about one final thing, and that's zeta functions. Noriko already made a point. Some K3 surfaces that were modular or automorphic in some sense, and this comes almost for free for the singular K3 surfaces. And that's because these elliptic curves have complex multiplication. And then there's classical theory dating back to Deuring, who proved that they are associated with some Hecke characters. So this is like those appearing on the Fermat surfaces or generally on Fermat varieties, and also for any elliptic curve of complex multiplication. And then basically, I haven't really sketched this figure yet. You have this diagram. So you start from A over there, basically get to the Kummer, and then from the Kummer you go to the K3 surfaces. This is often referred to as the Sciolle-Nolte structure, and these hacker characters survive the structure. Maybe you have to go to some extension, but then also the extension, you get the zeta function in terms of hacker characters. So this is for singular cases. That's exactly from the CN elliptic curve. And this also tells you that these singular K3s are always defined over some number fields, because the elliptic curves are on this construction. There might be some extension involved, but in fact you can do it over the ground field. So this is where the equation enters that Chuck had on the board this morning, where he knows he really wrote down the coefficients explicitly in terms of the J invariance of E and E prime. Now specifically you might wonder about the case of a Q. This is a theorem that was on the slides or on the board in Noriko's talk. If you have a singular K3 over Q and it's modular, so this is something that was proven independently of Wilde's Taylor, so this is completely different methods. The associated form has grade 3, Livne in 95 or so. In fact, there's also converse here. This is something that I did with Noam. So for every known grade 3 form, Hecker eigenform, with eigenvalues in Z, there is also a singular K3. So we kind of have a complete picture in the K3 case. So remember elliptic curves, where Shimura in the late 50s, maybe, or early 60s, showed that for every weight 2 form, you have an elliptic curve over Q, and then it took another 35 years to show that, conversely, every elliptic curve is associated to a modular form. And here the situation is completely opposite. We knew modularity, but this converse is kind of missing. And I should point out, since we are here at the Calabiau workshop, that in higher weight or higher dimension, this is completely open. So I was talking to Dico about this. So plug in weight 4 and Calabiau threefold, and it's completely unclear whether, well, it's not completely unclear. Every Calabiau threefold over Q that's rigid, so where you have a two-dimensional Galois representation, will be modular, but it's completely unclear whether all modular forms will occur. And in fact, it's unclear about what kind of sets we're talking, whether there are infinitely many or finitely many such Calabiaus, how many modular forms there are. So this is really a point where we need genuine new insight in order to advance any further. And what else do I want to say? Maybe I should say that much of this construction, this Schiode-Inozzi structure, works for lower Picard number 2. So, I mean, I was doing it with Picard number 20 in mind. We saw that depending on how we choose the elliptic curves, we can also do Picard number 18 and 19. And in fact, for any K3 with Picard number 19, you can kind of throw it, you can fit it into such a structure. So it has a quotient, which is Kummer, with transcendental lattice multiplied by 2, and then you can go back to the abelian surface. And for some with Picard number 17 and 18, this also works. So this is stuff done by Morrison in the early 80s. And well, hidden in here, I mentioned them once, are also these families of K3s. So in this construction, we work much with one-dimensional families. So there are many themes that, due to limitations of time, we couldn't really discuss now that will appear later on in this workshop. Abhinav's talk will have plenty of these things, or at least related things. And Adrian Klinger, who was already mentioned this morning, he will re-encounter this particular elliptic surface. Also Matt Kerr, where there are some applications to K-theory. So this was just some ideas about what might be interesting about high Picard number, and everything else will come in the next week. Thanks. Yeah. Well, we're lucky because I omitted the word CM so far. The fortunate thing is that grade 3 forms always have complex multiplication, which is really a strong property, and you can classify them essentially into a finite set. So you only have to find a finite number of K3 surfaces. It's kind of huge. It's something like 4,460 negative. So this already tells you that it's getting quite complicated. And I mean, working with one-dimensional families of K3s does not quite suffice. So you have to also look at two-dimensional families. But somehow K3s are nice enough so that you can do it. And this largely rests also on theory on elliptic surfaces, because there you can work out moduli explicitly, you can work out specializations explicitly, and in the end, you can find explicit additional devices. I mean, this is always, if you have a family of K3s, maybe you can have a guess doing point counting where the Picard number should go up. But then, if you want to prove that the Picard number goes up, unless you have really a moduli interpretation in terms of a Shimura curve, let's say, where you know these are the specific points of complex multiplication, you just have to find an additional divisor on the K3 surface. And I give you a quartic. I mean, what kind of divisor will you go looking for? I would have no clue how to find an additional curve on a quartic in a family. But on an elliptic surface, it will be, well, just a section. So you have to go looking for another section. And this is something that you can do with p-adic techniques. There are several things about elliptic surfaces going in there, but the main thing is that you reduce it to some finite computation. And so this is 65 or 66 modular forms. This is why there is the known here. So we've found K3s for all the 65 modular forms, and it is conjecture that the 66 doesn't exist, but this has been open for almost 40 years now. And in the weight 2 case, it's completely uniform. But the problem is, I mean, of course, there are uniform constructions for modular forms in the sense that you have universal elliptic curves, you can construct fiber products, and you get some geometric object associated to elliptic curve. The problem is the objects itself are not uniform. I mean, you might be lucky there are some Calabi-Yaus in there, but then usually the varieties will be some elliptically fibered varieties of Godard dimension 1, I would suppose. So I wouldn't know a uniform approach here. It's somewhat uniform in the sense that, for instance, working with families of K3s, you can find many singular K3s within a family. But essentially, you have to do every case by itself. And that's, of course, also one of the major obstructions to go to higher dimension, because there we have even less control about what color biaos could look like, how to construct them. So, this is just, and we're working, this is concerning the cohomology on H2. No, this is just a question about the eigenvalues of Frobenius. So for an elliptic curve, you're concerned with H1. And then the Y conjectures tell you the eigenvalues have absolute value p to the 1/2. And then you know from theory of modular forms that this can only correspond to wave 2 forms. And then if you increase the dimensions, so if you look at something x at hi of x, so if this is modular, then the weight of the modular form should be just I plus 1. At least if it's really a form corresponding to the outer angles of the Hodge diamond or the usual Tate type. So this is just what. So then for Calabi-Yaus, you're in H3, you find weight 4 forms. So this is just what it is. Not that I know that Leibniz theorem works, but you could, of course, I think the general theory says that you might be able to make something to work, maybe for real quadratic fields. And then this is about Galois representations coming with an quadratic form, which kind of allows you which somehow induces the complex multiplication. So Leibniz theorem is much more general, and K3s are only one of the applications that he has. But it's always over Q the way he writes it down. And there's a general theory that two-dimensional Galois representations should correspond to automorphic forms, but in a way we don't even have an idea what automorphic forms over imaginary quadratic fields really should look like. So over real fields, Hilbert modular forms, but then beyond that, it's still very conjectural. No, when the Picard number gets smaller, kind of the transcendental bit of the cohomology gets bigger, and then again we have no clue what kind of automorphic forms there could be. Langland's philosophy, you mentioned it in your talk, predicts that everything should be automorphic, but it's just that we don't understand anything so far. The two-dimensional case is the only thing that we can really handle. Thank you.